We are currently still in the recovery phase of operations. Once completed, the aircraft will be salvaged from the water.
Three Sitka Coast Guard members die in a helicopter crash. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 7th of July. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Alyeska Pipeline Company CEO resigns after an investigation.
It has, you know, created, quite a bit of distraction, and Mr. Hoffler doesn't want that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
Three people from Coast Guard Air Station Sitka died today after their helicopter crashed in waters off Washington State. A fourth was injured. Their names have not been released. There are about 170 Coast Guard members stationed in Sitka. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Coast Guard Rear Admiral Gary Bloor says the helicopter was an updated HH-60 called an HH-Tango. A Sitka crew flew down to Astoria yesterday to pick up the helicopter, which was being transferred from North Carolina. Officials say the crash happened around 8:30 a.m. Alaska time in the water near LaPush, Washington, a small community about 100 miles west of Seattle. Bloor briefed reporters around 2:30 Wednesday afternoon.
One crew member is at the hospital here in Seattle, having sustained non-life-threatening injuries. Tragically, the other three crew members have been declared deceased. Excuse me. The names will be released pending next of kin notifications. We are currently still in the recovery phase of operations. Once completed, the aircraft will be salvaged from the water. Again, I want to send our deepest sympathies from District 13 to the family and friends of this helicopter crew.
Again, that's Coast Guard Rear Admiral Gary Bloor during a briefing Wednesday afternoon carried on Northwest Cable News. Coast Guard crews from Oregon and Washington, as well as Canadian forces, assisted in rescue operations. So did nearby members of the Quileute Nation, including Daryl Penn, the harbor master in LaPush. He says he heard the crash and saw what appeared to be wreckage in the water. Others were already calling 911, Penn says, so he got on the radio and alerted the local Coast Guard about the accident. Then he got in a skiff with his cousin and went to help. He says they found one crew member in the water and brought him to shore.
After we brought the gentleman here, we stayed with him until EMT got here. And so we did our first aid, and just basic first aid, and he was definitely, banged up pretty good.
The Clallam County Public Utility confirms that the chopper struck some power lines that stretched over the water between the mainland and nearby James Island. Dennis Shaw is the utility's superintendent.
There's some lights or a light out on James Island that belongs to the Coast Guard. I'm assuming a warning light. And those wires used to serve those lights, but our understanding is that there's some solar panels now on the island, and that is what powers the lights.
Shaw says the utility de-energized the power lines immediately after the accident. Bloor from the Coast Guard says those lines were about 250 feet above water level.
It is not unusual for helicopters to fly anywhere from the surface to 2,000 or 3,000 feet. So that would not be a typical profile that they would be at that altitude. Now, power lines such as that are marked on aeronautical charts, which the crew would have had with them.
A Coast Guard chaplain has been dispatched from Juneau to Sitka to help Coast Guard personnel cope with the accident's aftermath. A crisis team is also expected in Sitka to offer counseling and other services to personnel and their families. With reporting from Lily Mihalik and Ken Fate in Sitka, as well as the Northwest News Network's Tom Bonsi, this is Ed Ronco reporting in Sitka.
Alyeska Pipeline Company is looking for a new chief executive officer following today's announcement that Kevin Hoffler will retire from the job at the end of September. He has worked at the company that operates the Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 2005. In a prepared statement sent out by the company, Hoffler is quoted as saying his retirement after a 30-year career with BP leaves plenty of time for a proper transition to a new leader. BP is the largest owner of the pipeline company. The statement also says that Alyeska Alaska will appoint an acting CEO if a permanent replacement is not found by the time Hostler leaves. Hostler has been the focus of criticism in recent months, particularly over a decision in February to transfer employees from assignments in Fairbanks and Valdez to company headquarters in Anchorage, despite concerns that safety issues could not be adequately addressed from a central point. That complaint was repeated when a 200,000-gallon oil spill near Fairbanks in May closed the pipeline for 3 days. Democratic Representative David Guttenberg of Fairbanks says Hostler has been a part of Alaska's lack of response to employee concerns.
The pipeline's got a lot of life left in them, and you've got to listen to your employees, the people that know their product. And clearly that's been a problem. Hopefully somebody who comes in to take Mr. Hostler's place will have an open mind and be able to listen to criticism and constructive criticism and have a pipeline that has a lot of life left.
Corporate Communications Director Michelle Egan says Alyeska has just gone through an open work environment study by an independent investigator on behalf of the owners of the pipeline. She says that investigation found no substantiated safety or integrity concerns.
There was this investigation, and it did look into issues such as budgeting concerns, the transfers. It was determined that there was not an impact on safety or environmental issues, and so that was very clear in the report. But it has, created quite a bit of distraction, and Mr. Hostler doesn't want that.
Egan says Hostler's replacement will be chosen by the owners of the pipeline from employees of the owner companies or from an outside search sometime in the next 3 months. A leader in Alaska's Moravian Church has been indicted on multiple counts of sexual abuse. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
Carly E. Kamrak, age 52, of Bethel, is the president of the church's Alaska Provincial Board and a pastor at the Bethel Moravian Church. He was arrested on June 22nd for charges that he sexually abused a 12-year-old girl. Just after midnight on June 21st, Bethel police were called about a sexual assault involving a Kamrak. An officer responded to the scene, which happened in a home located on church property where a Kamrak currently lives. After investigating, police arrested a Kamrak on 2 felony counts of sexual assault. When questioned, a Kamrak admitted to sexually touching the girl. Further investigation led to more counts against a Kamrak. They included what happened on the 22nd, as well as from an assault on the same victim on a previous occasion. A grand jury in Bethel indicted a Kamrak on a total of 6 felony counts of sexual assault. The Bethel Moravian Church has no comment on the pastor's arrest. Someone at the church's office said they could not comment because they don't know any details about the case. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Unalaska residents learn to take cover from bald eagle attacks.
I screamed and waved my arms all about and ran inside because I could feel the blood.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by North Rim Bank, helping you get from where you are to where you want to be. Achieve more. North Rim Bank for Business. Information at northrim.com. Member FDIC.
Federal Communications Commissioner Mignon Claiborne is visiting Alaska to get a better sense of how Alaskans will benefit from expanded internet capability or broadband. Increased bandwidth allows users to transmit several types of data, video, voice, and graphics, online, and the data travels 10 to 20 times faster than information sent over dial-up modems. Claiborne says increasingly, broadband is a necessity for both business and education.
Broadband is the answer to every single question that we have in terms of educational gaps, in terms of workforce opportunities, in terms of healthcare improvements or enhancements. Broadband is literally the backbone of all of that.
The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act dedicates $7.2 billion to expansion of the nation's broadband capability. Claiborne says U.S. Senator Mark Begich has pushed hard to get Alaska some of those dollars. Begich recently announced that McCarthy will receive $5.2 million to extend wireless broadband connectivity, joining more than 100 villages in the Yukon-Kuskokwim region.
We'll have well over 120 villages, communities connected by high-speed broadband. McCarthy is just another one now to add to the long list.
Alaska is receiving the third largest amount in the nation to expand its broadband capability. Energy and budget issues dominated a political forum Tuesday in Fairbanks, featuring seven candidates for governor. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The six Republicans and one Democrat at the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce Forum all declared their support for building a pipeline to transport natural gas from the North Slope to Alberta, Canada, or Valdez, or the Kenai Peninsula, depending on who was speaking. Alaska's governor, his two leading Republican rivals, and a Democrat at the forum all disagreed on how to get the pipe built and how to get the gas that will come out of it to market. The most heated exchanges occurred between Governor Sean Parnell and Ralph Samuels, the former Anchorage lawmaker and State House Majority Leader, and Bill Walker, a Fairbanks lawyer and entrepreneur. Parnell backs the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act, or AGIA. It's a measure that Parnell inherited from his predecessor, former Governor Sarah Palin. AGIA calls for construction of a gas pipeline that follows the oil pipeline to Delta Junction, then splits off eastward into Canada to connect to a pipeline system there. Walker, a former Valdez mayor and city council member, says it's time to stop decades of analysis and instead get to work on a different pipeline.
Stop studying, start building.
Walker said he'd abandon the AGIA plan and quit paying $500 million to a Canadian firm to manage the project, and instead he'd press for construction of an all-Alaska line that would run along the existing oil pipeline corridor, all the way from the slope to Valdez.
Let's build the all-Alaska line. Let's get an economy to Fairbanks. Let's get cheap energy in Fairbanks. I'm tired of Alaskans having the highest cost energy in the nation, and you're 500 miles from energy Mecca.
Samuels says an all-Alaska pipeline is too expensive and that AGIA won't work. And it's typical of what he says is a lack of strong leadership by Parnell. Samuels says he voted against AGIA when he was in the legislature and that changes in the natural gas market now make a line to Valdez impractical. Samuels now backs construction of a smaller pipe called a bullet line to bring natural gas from the slope to Fairbanks, then to South Central and on to the Kenai Peninsula.
I wholeheartedly disagree with Bill. I don't think it's realistic to go to Valdez. Now, that being said, what we can do is Alaskans can be willing to invest in ourselves and get a small diameter line. It's the fastest way.
Hollis French, the lone Democrat at the table, stressed the need for, quote, a big pipe, big enough to bring gas from the slope to make it worth a company's time and money to build and bring down the cost of natural gas.
What you need is a big pipe. Because a big pipe carries lots of gas, and that's how you get the price down to where you can afford it. You need private industry to build this project, because they know more about this than government ever will.
And to help make it happen, French, a state senator from Anchorage, said rebuilding the Hall Road would be his top priority transportation project. Although all the candidates said they'd promote more mining, French and Republican Sam Little both said they oppose the Pebble Mine, a controversial open-pit mine proposed for southwestern Alaska. Walker, Samuels, and Parnell all said they're inclined to favor Pebble, but that more information is needed and that in any case the project should be allowed to get through the permitting process. A few questions near the end of the forum required the candidates to depart from their standard talking points. One question required the Republicans to declare who they'd be supporting in the race for Lisa Murkowski's U.S. Senate seat. Would they back the incumbent or Joe Miller, the Fairbanks lawyer and darling of the state and national Tea Party organizations? The question clearly made Parnell uncomfortable.
Who will you be supporting in the upcoming race for the U.S. Senate seat?
Yeah, nice to have you stand up on that one. Frankly, I support
Well, I know, and listen, neither one has asked me for their endorsement. Both are my friends. I will work with either one. I work well right now with Senator Murkowski, frankly.
In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Unalaskans are dealing with an unusual issue, bald eagle attacks. The birds are just trying to protect their young, but community members want to go about their daily lives and are searching for solutions to the problem. KUCB's Ann Hillman has the story.
Last week, Elena Gustafson was just running a typical errand in the middle of town.
So, it was a normal day. I go to the post office, I go in, I get my parcels, I come back out, put them in my car, and on my way back in, about 20 feet to the door, I hear the and the pain on my head. At which point, I screamed and waved my arms all about and ran inside, because I could feel the blood.
The eagle swooped down from a nearby light post. Its nest is on the other side of the parking lot, on the side of a cliff, about 200 feet away. Gustafson isn't the only one who's been attacked. A man was dive-bombed twice in the same spot. A different eagle drew blood when a man was walking on the only road between the Westward Seafood Plant and town. Gustafson says the eagles scare her.
A few days ago, I was there and I saw a friend, and she was going back into the other parking lot area where the eagles were, and I actually started to cry because I was so concerned that she may get hurt.
Bald eagles are a federally protected species that are managed locally by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The service spokesperson, Bruce Woods, says such attacks are rare, and bald eagles are not typically aggressive birds. The eagles are just trying to protect their young. But the issues arise because the nests are in populated areas. The nests can be removed, but with special permits.
But there are permits to remove eagle nests when the eagles are no longer using them, which is obviously what we prefer, because then the eagles simply relocate to another area, and we hope to an area where they're not going to get in anybody's way and vice versa. There are also in the cases where there's a serious risk to human health, depredation permits that do allow the nest to be taken down even if it does have chicks in it.
A fish and wildlife biologist is examining the nests this week to see if removing them is necessary. But some community members, including Gustafson, don't think they should be.
That's where they're at. They've been there for a long time. You know, they're just protecting their babies. And I have a baby. I know what that's like. You just want to take care of them the best you can. So, you know, maybe they're a little bit more aggressive than they should be. And that kind of scares me a bit. But, you know, I don't think you should move them. I think we should just stay away from them.
While that's possible in some areas, it's not in others. In the small island town of Unalaska, where many people don't have vehicles and the road system on the hilly terrain is limited, it's hard to find an alternative route. Wood says the people should try protecting themselves by walking in groups, wearing hard hats, and carrying sticks.
If you can carry a stick or a broom or something and just hold it above your head as you walk closer to the eagle's nest, often the eagles will see this and want to avoid flying into it, so they won't come as close.
However, he says that people should try not to swing the stick and hurt the eagles. Current federal law does not allow people to injure eagles in self-defense.
But in the real world, we're not in the business of trying to prosecute someone who's protecting themselves.
Gustafson has other suggestions.
Don't turn your back on them. That's when they attack you, is with your back facing them. It seems to be that the cart noise tends to get them all excited. So if you're using a cart, keep a close eye out and, you know, just be very aware. So apparently, if you hear the swooping sound, duck and cover.
The visiting fish and wildlife biologist will try to determine if, how, and when the nest should be moved, if at all. In Unalaska, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
More than a million salmon fry died over the weekend in two separate accidents at Sitka hatcheries. At Medovici Hatchery, about 950,000 Chinook fry were killed when a closed valve stopped water flow through a freshwater raceway. The hatchery is managed by the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. Steve Reifenstuhl is NSRAA's general manager.
People spend their life and their whole career raising fish. This is not taken lightly, and it's a real tragedy for everyone involved, and it affects fisheries in the future.
In a separate incident at the Sheldon Jackson hatchery, some 120,000 Chinook and 120,000 coho were killed. That's according to Jim Seeland, vice chairman of the board for the Sitka Sound Science Center, which runs the hatchery. Seeland says the loss occurred when the hatchery's water intake valve became blocked.
We have an alarm system in the head tank down there at the hatchery. And when the level drops, there's a sensor in there that's supposed to trip the alarm, and the alarm should dial us. It's hooked up to a phone dialer because no one lives on the site.
Seeland says for whatever reason, the alarm sent out its warning too late on Monday morning. He says about 5,000 fish were saved, and the hatchery had already released millions of chum and pink salmon earlier this year. Sandpoint residents are having to adjust to less frequent mail service. From member station KSDP, Catherine Ford reports.
Since May, mail service to Sandpoint has been slower. The mail is arriving later in the day and oftentimes waits days in Anchorage to be flown out. Pinair President Danny Siebert explains.
We had to cut some of the capacity back out of the market because there was too much lift going into Sandpoint. So we cut the morning freighter and to see what that would do to the remainder of the other flights going into the community. And indeed, the mail is going into the community. It's just not getting there as early in the morning as it used to.
The reduction in mail service is part of a broader set of changes going on at Pinair.
For several years now, we've been trying to eliminate all of our metros out of the service. And as recently as about 4 years ago, we had seven of the metro liners. I'm down to two metro liners right now, and we're planning on turning one of our Saab passenger airplanes into an all-cargo aircraft.
Carl Warner with the Aleutians Eastboro School District says there have been some noticeable delays. Warner says larger boxes are taking longer to arrive than smaller packages. He says recent delays have ranged from a week or more, forcing some projects to be put on hold. Pinair is flying the mail to Sandpoint on its passenger flights arriving in Sandpoint in the early and late afternoon. Catherine Ford reporting in Sandpoint.
On a rainy 4th of July evening in a subdivision east of Homer, the Hokahay Motorcycle Challenge came to a close with a big blowout party to honor the 100 or so riders who completed the journey from Key West, Florida. Participants also heard from race organizer Big Jim Red Cloud. The atmosphere was festive, despite some tragic news. KBVI's Aaron Selbig was there and has the story.
Hokahay rider Kenneth Green of Ocala, Florida, was killed at mile 107 of the Glen Highway Sunday when his motorcycle ran off the road. Green joins Charles C. Lynn of Sorrento, Florida, as two men who lost their lives riding the Hokahay Motorcycle Challenge, while several others, including a man who struck two bicyclists on the Parks Highway last Wednesday, lay in hospitals all over the country. As the 100 or so men and women who finished the Hokahay Motorcycle Challenge gathered around him, Big Jim Red Cloud addresses the critics of the race, saying the riders were not to blame.
When the whip of history reaches your hand, lady, you make sure that its lash hits my back, not theirs. I love every one of you guys and women and families that support him. We have men who paid with their lives. How dare you? Come on. And that man that put that stuff in that newspaper about all these people here, how dare you?
Red Cloud says any Hokahay rider who was dissatisfied with the challenge in any way can return the gold Hokahay coin they received at the beginning of the race in exchange for their $1,000 entrance fee. Red Cloud says the Hokahay Motorcycle Challenge is likely to live on next year, although it will be without his leadership. Seattle millionaire John White is set to take over the race, Red Cloud says, although the route will most likely be up the eastern seaboard into Canada instead of to Homer. White did not return emails and telephone calls in time for this story. After his speech, Red Cloud joined his brother, who finished the challenge, in a song. After all the speeches and prayers, the riders gathered around the stage, and while the Homer-based Holy Santos gang warmed up to play, began to tap their Hokahay coins on the edge. On the dusty road leading into the party grounds, a line of maybe 100 Harley Davidsons, some old, some new, some beaten up, and some flat out gorgeous, stood parked next to each other like guards. Homer rider Eric Wickery, who complained vocally in the local media, including KBBI News, that the directions handed out by Hokahay organizers were bogus and that the whole thing might be a scam, said he would do it all again.
When I got to town, I said, double or nothing. I'll turn right around right now and get back to Key West in 5 days for $1 million in cash. But I want to see the money first.
Even Wickery, one of the race's biggest critics, says the experience was awesome, and he got a brand new motorcycle in the deal, a 2007 Harley-Davidson Electra Glide Ultra Classic.
This is going to sound stupid, but would you mind starting it up? Can we hear it?
That's not stupid at all.
In Homer, I'm Aaron Selby.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ed Ronco in Sitka, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Ann Hillman in Unalaska, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Catherine Ford in Sandpoint, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA. Alaska's Institute of Technology Maritime Department is offering a Coast Guard-approved Marine Oiler class beginning September 13th in Seward. The course will familiarize students with propulsion, power generation, and auxiliary systems on motor and steam ships. Required prerequisite training criteria is on the web at avtec.edu. Information at 800-478-5389. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.